With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Is there a better time to enjoy a fresh-cooked meal than spring? So many ingredients are at the peak of their growing seasons, and flavors in full bloom at HelloFresh. Enjoy the taste of spring with chef-crafted recipes featuring ripe seasonal ingredients delivered right to your door. And there's no more scouring the grocery store for that one ingredient you need to complete your recipe, something I know a whole lot about. HelloFresh takes away all that hassle by delivering fresh, pre-portioned ingredients so you have exactly what you need, and it helps you cut down on food waste. And HelloFresh cares about quality. That's why their seasonal ingredients are picked at peak ripeness and travel from farm to your home in less than 7 days, so you know that they're fresh. As I've told you on the podcast before, I am not a great cook. My wife, my oldest daughter, they can stare into the fridge, see a couple of ingredients, add some spices, and boom, we have a great meal. Me, I need a plan. HelloFresh gives me that plan. They make it easy, that's so easy that I can cook a great dinner. So if you want to join HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com/16BA2023. That's code 1616BA2023 for 16 free meals plus free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/16BA2023. And remember, HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. You can join the club today. Get HelloFresh. 2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back.
Gone. Welcome to the Hot Sheet Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce of the Prospect Team here and the curator of this week's Hot Sheet List. I'm rolling dolo today on a solo mission. Bear is, gathering and hunting for food out there in the wilderness. We are on the cusp of our first system updates of the season to our top 30s. So all of us are incredibly busy behind the scenes, speaking with opposing scouts, contacts within organizations, etc., to make sure that we give you the most accurate top 30 lists possible. So you're going to have to listen to me ramble on for about 25 minutes today on my own. But as I said, I was the one that came up with the hot sheet this week, so I am intimately familiar with all the names that are on here. We'll start out with number one, one of my favorite pitching prospects in the game right now. I think there's some argument to even be made that he could be a top 10 pitching prospect, depending upon how you sort of break this stuff down. But that is the Dodgers right-hander Emmett Sheehan. Have quite a bit of history with Sheehan over the years, as you know, he was a Boston College starter here in 2021, was the ace of that staff. And since then has grown quite a bit. He handled innings here. BC really didn't have a bullpen at that time. But since then, he's been under the Dodgers tutelage. We know exactly what the Dodgers do in terms of pitching development. There are few, if any, teams that are better than that in the game in terms of identifying talent in the amateur side. And then bring those guys into their player development and really turning them into something. Sheehan, outlier fastball traits. It's a low release height that allows him to create very flat vertical approach angle with some hop. Not all that dissimilar from Bryce Miller. I don't know if he's quite the outlier Miller is in terms of IVB, but I know that he has a lower release height. Makes him a really interesting pitcher. I know that I heard watching the Sunday broadcast, I watched both Sheehan starts this week, as I tend to try to tune into the pitchers that I enjoy watching pitch throughout the week. I had an interesting week last week. There were no games here locally or even in the remote area. So I had, no games at Worcester, no games at New Hampshire, no games at Hartford, even Hudson Valley was away. And then New Hampshire was up in Portland. I've seen both those teams multiple times. It wasn't worth the 4-hour round trip, up to Maine. So yeah, it was an interesting week. I sat here, I watched a lot of games, and knew that I had the hot sheet as a task. So I just tuned into as many games as I possibly could. Sheehan was one that I was really tuning in on. I think the Sunday start was probably the most impressive, because he did make a two-step this week, had a start on Tuesday, and then came on in relief of Nick Frasso, who had returned from a little bit of a shutdown or injury. He hadn't pitched since the beginning of the month. Frasso went three innings, pitched very well. Sheehan then came in and threw six, which is his longest outing of the season. And I know that there was some talk in the broadcast that he could potentially be called up to AAA, and that could be the last pitch that we saw. This is at the end of the game in AA for Tulsa. That has not been the case. He's still on that Tulsa roster. Certainly there could be some things in the works throughout the week, which we'll touch on later. We had a couple of guys that were promoted actually midweek this week that made the hot sheet. But the thing with Sheehan that's really interesting is just the quality of the slider has improved quite a bit. He's always had a pretty good changeup dating back to his amateur time, collegiate time at Boston College. But the fastball quality, and I know they said it on the broadcast that Tulsa's pitching coach actually said that it's the best fastball in the minor leagues. I don't think that's necessarily hyperbole. When we look at the traits that I had talked about before, his ability to command, and he holds his velocity. He was still holding 94 to 96, touching 7 late into that game. And as I said, he went 6. We've seen the development in the pitchers that have come out of this Dodgers system of late. You know, I think there's a case to be made that if things really click, he continues to show the command that he's shown thus far in 2023 as he moves up the ladder and eventually into the major leagues, and continues to be as efficient as he's been and shows the quality in those secondaries, we could be talking about another mid-rotation or better type of arm here in Sheehan. You know, I do think that there is certainly some split within the industry, even within our prospect team, in terms of how high you want to go on Sheehan. I'm probably the highest on this particular profile. He kind of fits into that niche of pitchers that I like, with really good fastball quality, outlier release traits, velocity, movement, and a pair of secondaries that he will throw, though he is incredibly fastball dominant. He's a little bit of an outlier in this day and age of guys throwing their fastballs a lot less. We see a lot more of the breaking balls. We see a lot more changeups than we had in previous years. He's kind of an outlier because of what the quality of the fastball is. You don't want to necessarily tell this guy to throw it less. And it's funny, I'm going to jump around on the list a little bit here and go to another pitcher that I think is somewhat similar in some ways. Not sure if I necessarily like the secondaries as much, but there could probably be some debate there. And that is Mariners right-hander Brian Wu. Wu, toward the end of last season, I think kind of popped a little bit. He showed up in the Arizona Fall League, pitched very well in front of a lot of people. And it's very similar to Sheehan in the sense that it's outlier release traits, very flat vertical approach angle. I checked this yesterday. He's a sub-4 VAA guy. And just to give you some sort of major league relevance here, guys like Gerrit Cole, guys like Jacob deGrom are typically around that 4-degree VAA, which is sort of a flatter plane. If you think about it, the steeper the plane is, the higher the number is going to be. That means you're a little bit more downhill. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It just kind of depends on your pitch mix. Wu, the last time I checked, is like a 3.8 VAA, which is incredibly outlier. And he's not like a super small guy. So he does this with good extension, with a lower, you know, sort of release traits and arm slot. And he's able to create a lot of efficiency because he is a, you know, pronation sort of dominant profile, which means he has high fastball efficiency, is the ability to sort of change over, turn over, change up. He's interesting though, because he does throw a really good sweeper as well, which isn't always necessarily indicative of these pronation profiles. He's a guy that doesn't get a ton of hop on the fastball, but because of those outlier release traits, where he releases it from, it's about 15 to 16 inches of ride with some heavy bore, meaning he gets sort of arm side movement as well. It's a really, really interesting pitch mix. He's really heavily dominant on that fastball and slider. He's got a curveball. He's got a changeup. I think he's only thrown like a handful of changeups this season. He doesn't throw it all that frequently, but it's a great fastball. It's, you know, a really good slider as well. And he's another guy like Sheehan that made a couple of starts this week. Went 10 innings, did allow 6 hits, 5 walks, but struck out 10 over those two performances, and just generally looks really good this season in AA in the Texas League, which is not an easy place to pitch. He pitches in Arkansas, which is a little bit easier than some of the other parks in that particular league. But if you're familiar, you know that he has to go to places like Amarillo. He's got to go to places like Frisco, where the ball absolutely flies out of the park. So for me, I think Wu is another name to sort of keep an eye on. I think that we're starting to see him sort of on the back end of top 100 lists. He's certainly in consideration for sort of the next man up within our top 100 list. I think he's really interesting, a pretty good athlete. He moves well on the mound, gets downhill, as I said, sort of creates that outlier release height. So that makes him a name that I really want to go after. Unfortunately, Josh isn't here this week, but try to step in here for a little bit of Jacob Mizorowski love. Josh was there this week for his 5-inning turn, didn't allow a hit, actually allowed one base runner, and it was on a check swing where the ball ended up hitting the guy, which just kind of shows you how nasty he is that, you know, you're swinging at a pitch that's actually going to hit you. He's in low A. I think that's the only concern we really have at this point, is there are some reliever risk here, but he went 5 innings. He dominated. It's starting to become a trend with Mizorowski. And, you know, I think he's probably one of the higher helium names at this point in the minor leagues on the pitching prospect side. The stuff is nasty. It is a very good fastball. Sort of another guy with outlier release traits, doesn't get as much hop, but it's a good fastball. It is a nasty slider. If you watch some of the video that Josh put up, it is literally impossible to get after. You know, he says he peaked at 101 in that start. It's upper 90s cheese. And he's mixing in that really good breaking ball. And it's funny because that breaking ball, as I said, was actually the pitch that hit the batter on the check swing, you know, and it was a breaking ball that actually got him in the foot. So that kind of tells you how nasty that pitch is, how much movement there is, and how much that really confuses opposing hitters. So Mizorowski is another name that I'd be checking in on quite a bit. He's really, really interesting to me. Really just a big fan of Mizorowski. I wish I had an opportunity to see him myself. I do try to sort of travel around and see the best pitching prospects in person so I can get sort of those in-person first-hand accountability looks on them. But for now, I've just had to look at the data, had to look at, you know, the video that Josh has put up and then broadcast when he's playing in an MLB park that does have broadcasts. Let's jump onto another name here that's we're talking about all my co-hosts and their favorite names here because I have so many podcasts at this point. But 90th percentile, I'm not sure if you guys have checked that out. I kind of revamped that. It's on the main BA feed here. Brought in Matt Pajak of Loden Sports, who does athletic testing for a variety of sports, but primarily baseball, I would say, is his focus. And he has some really great insights into how athleticism impacts projection and just talent in baseball. We had a really stirring conversation over the last two podcasts there on velocity. It's a two-part episode. Just finished up the second one that posted yesterday on your feed, but I want to give credit to Matt here as one of the first times I was introduced to Matt was years ago, and he had written a really interesting article about athleticism in baseball and perceived athleticism in baseball. And two of the players that he used in this particular article, sort of just to compare and contrast, were a first round pick that was incredibly highly touted in Jordan Adams of the Angels versus a guy who went in later rounds to the Dodgers in Johnny DeLuca. The article might have even been written pre-draft, but I can't remember. Since that point in time, we've seen their prospect status sort of intersect as DeLuca's prospect status has really climbed, that he's almost at the cusp of the top 100 now. And Jordan Adams, you know, we've just seen him not perform and not really develop in a way that we had anticipated based on some of his athletic exploits. If you're not familiar with Jordan Adams at this point, I believe was a 3- or 4-star football recruit for D1, was going to go to UNC Chapel Hill, if I remember correctly. Certainly there's a chance that I'm wrong. Also went viral for dunking on one of his classmates in gym class. That was a gif that you'll see quite frequently when someone's getting dunked on Twitter or whatever. That's actually Jordan Adams dunking on somebody in gym class. But great athlete. But in terms of his explosiveness and some of the baseball athleticism, Matt's article kind of pointed to how strong Johnny DeLuca was as a baseball athlete. You know, if you've seen him before, he's sort of a stout guy, but very, very strong, muscular, runs really well. Not sure he's necessarily plus, but it's above average. And there's power projection there is one of the things that Matt really sort of homed in on. And thus far we've seen that, you know, he's, you know, had, I think 18 extra base hits in his last 32 games. He's among the level leaders in double A in home runs. Last week hit 393, 414, 821. It's 11 for 28 with five runs, a double, a triple, three more taters, six RBIs, a walk, and then seven strikeouts. Usually the approach is a little bit better than that, but you know, he was seeing beach balls. So typically when that happens, guys are locked in, they're swinging. There will be some strikeouts that go along with everything else. But DeLuca is one of these names that I think is just fascinating in the sense that another later round Dodgers guy, another steal that they got, and they're able to sort of turn that into a potential everyday player. You don't see that very often, that teams are consistently able to get guys outside of round 10 that turn out to be very good players. And the Dodgers have been doing it for years. DeLuca seems to sort of fall into another one of these unheralded outfield prospects the Dodgers have developed and turned into a potential everyday guy. It'll be interesting to see how all of these names and prospects at the top of this Dodgers list shake out, if there are any trades that are made to upgrade the major league roster, despite, you know, even more departures this year, which just seems to be an annual thing with the Dodgers, where they lose players, replace them with more players within the system and guys that they add, and they just keep on rolling and churning it out, as they have one of the better records in baseball right now. So DeLuca's a really interesting one. We're going to take a quick break right now. We'll be right back, and we'll talk with about a few more of these names that are on the hot sheet this week.
If you know me, you know how much I hate making plans. But something I hate even more is having nothing to do. So enter Game Time. Game Time has made it so easy to look up events happening tonight in my area, and I can buy tickets the easy way. So maybe I'll head to a Nationals game, or I'll go see a concert or a comedy show, whatever. I get access to the best seats and the best deals at the last minute, all while keeping my plans stress-free, just how I like them. I mean, it's the fastest-growing ticketing app in the country for a reason. Buy tickets in a matter of seconds. Two taps and you're set. Tickets are sent directly to your phone, so you never have to dig through all of those unread emails. Snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code BASEBALLAMERICA for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code BASEBALLAMERICA for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
All right, and we are back. We're going to jump into another name here in Elly De La Cruz. There were some rumors before the week started that De La Cruz was being called up to Cincinnati based off of an Instagram post that was posted with a still shot of Elly sort of celebrating with Post Malone's congratulations playing in the background. It turned to be much ado about nothing, as Elly did not get called up. Instead, he was taking it to Worcester last night at home in Louisville, where he hit a walk-off homer. So he's continuing his hot run, but last week he was good as well. 429, 500, 952 slugging percentage last week. Six runs, a couple of doubles, no triples, three home runs, six RBIs, four walks to five strikeouts, two steals and three opportunities. The thing with Elly that we're seeing is we're seeing the development of the hit tool. I know JJ wrote about this yesterday. Won't go too in-depth about it, but I encourage you to come onto our website and read that Elly De La Cruz article. It was very good. Josh Norris actually had a great tweet yesterday kind of looking at Elly in AAA this season. If you're not familiar, they use the full ABS system from Tuesday to Thursday and then from Friday to Saturday. They're using the challenge system, which is very similar, but it's more of a pitcher and hitter sort of driven system where they sort of pat their head and tell you which side or another they're going to be going to, whether they want to challenge or not. That ended up showing that there were some splits that Elly in the full ABS actually walks a lot more, strikes out less. Numbers are really good, but there's been development there this season, and that tends to happen with sort of these best of the best prospects, guys that do a lot of damage, because pitchers, even at the upper level, start to pitch around them. They get a little bit more refined in terms of the things that they're swinging at. But when you look at the total package, there's few players in baceball that are as exciting as Elly De La Cruz is. You have the power, you have the contact, you have the speed, you have the defensive ability. I know that JJ and I were talking offline, as we often do on a Monday or Tuesday, sort of rehashing the week, what we're working on, but also just talking baseball, talking prospects, which is something that, you know, we all sort of share a passion for here at Baseball America. And JJ was saying, like, you know, he's like, I think this guy could be a 55, 60 shortstop. There's no reason to move him off. And I think he's right. I mean, it's an unbelievable arm. You can maybe put an eight on it, probably could if you wanted to. The actions are there. He's incredibly athletic. He's just such a unique profile that the only comp that really comes to mind with me, and I'm not sure that it's fair to Ellie, frankly, but that's for Fernando Tatis Jr. And I think he's a better defender than Tatis has ever been at shortstop. Tatis's approach might have been more refined at this point, but the power, the ability to get on base, there's enough contact there. The things that he can do as a base runner, stealing bases, taking that extra base and a ball to the gap, all these little things sort of add up to make him a really impactful player that can impact the game, for lack of a better term, in a variety of ways. And that's what makes Ellie, I think, arguably the number one prospect in baseball. We've been going through this over the last couple of weeks, whether it's Jackson Holliday, whether it's Jackson Chourio, whether it's Ellie. I've had other people that I respect immensely say, what about Jordan Walker and the power that Walker has there? And despite the fact that he hasn't really been hitting in AAA, I think we all know that he's going to eventually click. The skills are there. And I think it's just, you know, the balance of skills with Ellie, that he has that explosiveness with even better athleticism than Jordan Adams, with a defined defensive position. Maybe he doesn't have the plate skills of a Jackson Holliday, but it's not as far off as you think, and he hits the ball incredibly hard. I know that he's being looked at as a risky prospect, but I do think in some ways that the risk on a profile like Ellie's is negated by just how unusual, how outlier so many of his tools and abilities are. And then we start to talk to folks that have played with Ellie, folks that have coached Ellie, people within that organization or have been peripheral to that organization in the last few years. And the makeup stuff is off the charts, which really, you know, the term leader comes up consistently. And we don't always hear that, particularly with baseball players. It seems like he keeps guys loose. Guys like playing with him. And he's a positive contribution to the locker room. It's interesting. Cincinnati has this really interesting group of prospects and young players, actually, in the major leagues, in the upper levels, that can be up on the major league team by like July, August. That makes them a very watchable team for someone that hasn't been all that competitive over the last couple of years. They've done a good job of bringing talent into this organization. They got more draft picks this year. We'll see how that pans out. So it's a very interesting system, sort of from top to bottom. And, you know, credit to Ellie De La Cruz for some of the improvements that he's made this season. I had teased a couple of players that had been promoted sort of midweek this week within the hot sheet. And the first one that we're going to talk about is James Wood, another outlier sort of guy, not necessarily the athlete that Ellie is, but a tremendous athlete, a very big body, very similar to Ellie. If she's taller than Ellie is. James Wood, he's hit very well during his time with High A Wilmington. It's not an easy place to hit. Started off the week, you know, really hot, had a bunch of multi-hit games, I think, to start the week. Scattered three home runs throughout the week. Ended up getting the call to Double A on Sunday, of all days, and had a hit in that game as well. So now we have James Wood up to Double A. He's still just 20 years old. And as things have gotten, you know, hotter in terms of weather and environment, he's continued to hit and play really well. I think this guy is easily one of the top 10 prospects in the game. If we're going to bring it to the fantasy side of things, I think he could be even be a top 5 to 6 prospect. You could maybe even argue higher. The power upside here is immense. The contact skills overall have taken another step forward this year. There's still some zone whiff, but he rarely chases. Which I think is a credit to Wood and to that approach. And this is a debate I have with people all the time when they obsess about in zone whiff rates, is if the guy has a low chase rate, but his whiffs come in zone, I'm sort of okay with him. He's swinging at the right pitches. He's swinging at strikes, even sort of incremental improvements over the next couple of years within that particular space can lead to more results, paid dividends. You know, we've seen somebody like this struggle a little bit in Gunnar Henderson, who had some end zone whiff concerns, with great chase and a lot of power. So, you know, it's not always smooth sailing, especially when they get up to the major leagues. They're going to see more strikes. You're going to see guys that fool them a little bit more. But I do think these young players with these advanced plate discipline and power, you know, they tend to sort of right the ship and figure it out, know what they can and cannot swing at. And Wood is one of those guys. So, you know, he earned that promotion, and it makes a lot of sense. The other guy I'm going to bring up here that earned a midweek promotion was our Helium name this week. And some of that, as I've been doing some of my background work on the Houston system and updating a guy that wasn't on the top 30 list, but is probably going to be within the top 10 on that Houston system, which isn't saying ton. It's not the deepest system, but they had a really good draft. And I think it's an improving system just from a talent standpoint after so many graduations and, you know, missed drafts because of their, you know, their suspensions and Excel you know, just in terms of the things they had to deal with and the fallout of the cameras and trash can banging scandal and all that. I'm going to call it Spygate because that belongs to the Patriots. You know, we got to give them their own due. But Zach DiZenzo, who was a 12th rounder last year, DiZenzo has really proven to be really talented. I think it's more than just that great Asheville hitting environment. Asheville, if you don't know, one of the best hitting parks in all of any level of baseball. It's a great place to hit. The ball flies there. Fences are pretty short. So it allows guys to take advantage of that. But the thing with DiZenzo is the approach has been really good. The contact is average-ish. And the exit velocity data is excellent. So he's hit 407, 474, 628 with a 12% walk rate over 31 games with Asheville. He gets promoted during the week. I think it was on Friday to Double A Corpus Christi. Finishes the week strong, you know, hit 389, 500, 667, six runs scored, two doubles, a homer, four RBIs, three walks to two strikeouts, and one steal in two attempts. I don't know where he's going to end up defensively. He's played, you know, first, second, third base. Not sure he necessarily sticks in the dirt. Maybe he ends up as a corner outfielder. I know the team thinks that there is enough athleticism there that he can potentially hold down a corner spot. But, you know, the thing is with DiZenzo is you look at the combination of what I would call the big three, which is contact, approach, and power. He has that in spades. And these are the type of prospects that the Astros, number one, identify really well, but also develop within their system really well. So it'll be interesting to see how the rest of his season goes. I think he's a name to watch. You know, if you're an Astros fan, he's someone to maybe be excited about within the next couple of years. If you're a fantasy guy and you're playing dynasty baseball, I think DiZenzo is a name that is readily available, even in deeper leagues, that you can add. I added him in a 20-team league where I'm rebuilding. It's the Highlander Dynasty League. You had a pretty good first season, but the second year, the way this league is set up, I lost a lot of players. So I'm in rebuild mode right now. So I'm trying to chase as many high upside prospects as possible. And I got DiZenzo for, I think, a $0 bid. So just to goes to show you that even, you know, in a room full of sharks, that's a very smart league. You might be able to find some guys like this. And I think DiZenzo is a good one, which is one of the reasons that I picked him as a Helium name. I think I've gone through enough of the names here on this this week's hot sheet that I don't want to keep on going through, spoil it for everybody. So you can go on, you can take a look at this list. I'll be answering questions later today in the chat. Actually headed out to the ballpark now. Got an 11:30 game up in New Hampshire. Was there last night for a 3.5 hour game. It was one of the longest minor league games at the pitch clock I've been to. It was Griff McGarry was starting for Reading, which is one of the reasons I went. Bash ended up getting the start for New Hampshire. And it was kind of a bullpen game for New Hampshire. I think they went through four or five different pitchers. So a really interesting pitcher at the end of the game, though, in a right-hander by the name of Connor Cook. He's throwing like 5-7 and it's good fastball shape. He had a little changeup he was working off with a fastball that tunneled really well. A slider as well that was pretty nasty. I'll post some video of him when I get back from the game and have some opportunity to cut it later today. But just sort of a relief name to bring out there because I feel like Toronto parades out like 2 to 3 good relievers at Double A every single season, guys that I wasn't all that familiar with. So little gem I'll throw out there, but I got to get done. I got to get ready. I got to get in the shower. I got to get to the ballpark. I got to shoot some video, then get back here for the chat by 2 o'clock. So I'm going to have a whirlwind day, but I appreciate everybody tuning in again to the Hot Sheet Podcast. We'll be back next week. You want to just listen to me talk endlessly for 25 plus minutes. We'll have Josh back on next week. It will be the bear. It will be the parrot. This is Jeff Ponce signing off from Baseball America. Thanks for tuning in, and don't forget to check Hot Sheet.